Today is March 16th, 1994. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Martin Ott, lifelong Alaskan born in Rampart to a mining family. He's also been a miner and a founding member of the Alaska Independence Party. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in Mr. Ott's home in downtown Fairbanks. Okay, many pioneers, such as yourself, were born and lived in mining communities, areas of isolation, far from major supply centers. What was it like living in Rampart as a small child? What do you remember of your childhood there?
Well, living in Rampart, of course, I was seven years old when I left, and I had a twin brother and another brother 2 years older, and a sister 4 years older. Of course, for us kids, you know, without any responsibility, it was a good life and a lot of fun for us. In the summertime, and my dad was out in the creek in the mining operation, he mined with the hydraulic giants, strictly hydraulic giants, and everything was manual labor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have a lot of water, a lot of fun playing around the mining operation, getting wet, and getting in the way, and it was a lot of fun for us.
I was going to say the mine was not right in Rampart, it was some distance away.
The mining operation was 4 miles out of Rampart on Hunter Creek.
Mm-hmm. So you lived right in Rampart at that time?
We usually lived in the town in the winter time,
mm-hmm.
but out on the creek in the summer. From the time the snow started melting till it froze up.
So you had a good 3 months of summer activity out there.
We had at least 3 months of the whole mining season.
Did a little fishing on the side? Were there any places to fish?
We used to go down to the sisters, being older than we were, she used to take us down to Big Minook, which was about a mile below our mining operation, and we used to go fishing for grayling. Every now and then, but not very often. We seemed to keep pretty well occupied around the mining operation most of the time, and it was what we liked to do best.
Mm-hmm. Did you do a little gold panning too, or?
Well, we were too young to pan, but we used to find a nugget every now and then in the cut and show it to the dad, and he used to say, throw it in the sluice boxes. And that was kind of exciting.
Yeah, I bet. You said you lived in Rampart in the winter time.
Yeah, after the freeze-up, we'd live in the town of Rampart because my older brother and sister could go to school. We were two twins, and we were still too young to go to school. So our dad had a cabin in Rampart, and we'd live there in the winter months, just during the school season. Mm-hmm.
So all the miners came into Rampart to live during the winter?
Yeah.
Did they have other activities that they...
Well, some miners, say the old bachelors, they weren't tied down to any domestic responsibility. Some of them would be out in the creek either prospecting or... excavating, putting in shafts and stuff like underground activities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then haul the dirt, haul the pay dirt out, sluice it in the spring. So there was always some always activity for somebody.
What did your dad do during the winter? Just keeping track of his children was a full-time job.
Well, that was a pretty full-time job for him because he didn't have a mother there, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty full-time job.
So there were five children then?
There was four of us.
Oh, your older brother?
Yeah, a sister and an older brother and this two twins. There was my twin brother, Richard, the older brother, Adolf, and my sister, Anne. That was the family.
What do you remember about the town in terms of facilities? Was there a general store? Or?
Yeah, at that time there was an NC store, and then there was another store owned by Julius Ramsdorf. We used to call it the old store, and my dad used to go down there and have a few bull sessions with them off and on in the winter time. They were good friends. And as far as I can remember, those were the only two stores in Rampart at the time. But before that, from what I understand, there was an Alaska Commercial Company store. But this Julius Ramsdorf's store was the one that was usually always open. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the NC store was closed in the winter, best I remember. But there was a lot of activity in the summer, you know.
Mm-hmm. So Julius Ramsdorf's store sold, just general merchandise?
General merchandise, yeah.
So if you ran out of...
Both stores were always general merchandise.
Mm-hmm. What about a post office? Was that in the general store? Do you remember anything about postal service?
Yeah, there was a post office there. But I can't remember right offhand what store it was in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where was your house in terms of the town? Was it right down in the main part, or was it in the hills a little bit?
It was toward the lower end of town. The Rampart was spread out over a quarter of a mile long, I would say. And mm-hmm. Ours was toward the lower end of town, down the downriver end of town. Mm-hmm. And it was just a small log house.
Wood stove.
Oh yeah.
In the middle.
Wood stove. Everybody burned wood. We had a neighbor not too far from us. He was a black, but by the name of Eugene Swanson, and he had a saw, a wood cutting set up there, and he cut up wood in the winter time and sell wood, you know, to the community.
So you had to carry a few sticks in from time to time?
Yeah, we had to carry wood in because that was our only source of heat in the winter. there was no coal or no oil.
See, there was a coal seam across the river, but maybe that was...
Yeah, I understand
that. Earlier on.
I understand there was a coal seam in the area, but I can't remember of anybody ever developing it.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember some other interesting people in Rampart?
Well, I remember our closest neighbor was Mr. and Mrs. Clemens. Then I understand that the old man, I think his name was Ted Clemens. I understand he was a brother of Mark Twain.
Oh.
And they were our closest neighbors, and my brothers and I used to run up there and visit every now and then, get into a little mischief, like kids do. But we liked them. They were good neighbors. Mr. Clemens died about in the winter of 1925, if I remember right. And she was a widow all alone from then on. And I understand she lived there, left Rampart in 1946. At least that's when I last saw her here in Fairbanks.
Oh, so she moved into Fairbanks after that?
Yeah. But she kind of ran the mining operation alone. She'd get out there with the pick and shovel and the overalls on and the hip boots. And she did pretty good for herself until she finally sold out.
So she kept it going almost 20 years then after his death.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, were there any Native people that were involved in mining as helpers? Do you recall seeing anybody that from the Native community that might have had a hand at mining?
My dad used to hire the Natives there in the summer, like from the Evans family and I remember Tommy Evans was one of the Natives we used to hire, and I believe some from the Mayo family.
So they would...
They were Natives, and he used to hire Johnny Wheel once in a while.
Mm-hmm. What type of work did they do? Did they run any equipment?
No, there was no equipment to run. The only equipment there was a hydraulic giant. So
all the rest was pick and shovel, pretty much.
Pick and shovel, and if the rocks were too big, you took a wheelbarrow and rolled them out by hand, or you broke them.
That's doing it the hard way.
Well, I've had a lot of experience breaking rock later on. But I knew what it was. It's not that. It's really not that hard to break after you get the knack of it. It's something like splitting wood. You kind of look for the grain. Mm-hmm. You know.
And use just a great big.
Yeah, boulders. Yeah, big rocks.
And hit it with a metal mallet.
Sledgehammer. Mm-hmm. The rocks that are too big to go through the boxes. You know, like they are too big for the giant to move. The hydraulic giant, mm-hmm. All the pay dirt was moved with the hydraulic giant. No bulldozers, no caterpillars. If there was real heavy that had to be moved, my dad would hire, usually this Tommy Evans from Rampart had a couple of horses, and he'd haul the pipe. The hydraulic pipe and the heavier items that were hard to move by hand, you know. Put them on a wagon and move them.
Mm-hmm.
We had a neighbor up above us, 2 miles above us, by the name of Charlie Swanson and his wife. And once in a while, my dad would either loan them pipe, or they had a good relationship, so they'd borrow pipe from one another. The hydraulic pipe, you know, mm-hmm. the main line pipe. That's the pipe that's set in more permanent, and then from there you branch off with smaller pipe. So if you move further down the creek, you'd need more pipe. If you move further up, you'd be pulling pipe. So that was the only way. That was the only way they moved pay dirt. He didn't have to do much stripping like the like our neighbor up above us, he was stripping in the mud banks that was probably from 15 to 25 feet deep, and the old water would run black when he was got the hydraulic giants going. And of course, when the water was running black by the house, my dad would dig a gravel hole in the creek right close by, and we'd be drinking crystal clear water regardless. You know, as it sipped, you know how it does when you dig a gravel hole. It's dirty when you dig the gravel hole and then it clears up crystal clear. I don't know if you've...
Oh, no, I've never tried that.
You haven't had that experience?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
it's a good trick.
Oh, yeah, and then you dip into there with a couple of 5-gallon either gasoline or kerosene, empty kerosene or gasoline cans, and with a neck yoke to put across the neck and carry 2 buckets up to the house at a time, which was probably about not over 40 feet from the house, as a rule, not over 50 feet. So we had plenty of clear water to drink.
In the summer, but I guess winter was something else.
In the wintertime, he'd just melt snow. Chop a hole in the ice.
Oh, I see, and get it right out that way, go below the ice.
Yeah, and the creek would usually run all winter. There was a fair amount of water on the creek, so he could get water from under the ice. And we also had good clear ice, too, if he needed it.
Did you worry about boiling it, or did you use it as is?
The water?
Mm-hmm.
We never thought of filtering it.
Now, they tell you that now, but I guess in
those
days...
We used it like it was. And we were kids. If the water was contaminated, I don't think I'd be here.
So it must have been safe.
Keep you
healthy. I guess you saw some riverboats, old steam sternwheelers go up and down.
Oh, in those days, the steamer Yukon, it was a tourist boat that was running from Whitehorse to Nenana. And when the ice broke up, the boat would come down, and of course, when it froze up, they'd make the last trip and beach the boats for the winter. A steamer Yukon was a tourist boat that used to run by routinely all summer, but primarily with tourists, and it also freight. Although it was a Canadian boat, it would haul freight for
Dawson.
Yeah, along the way. In the summertime, it only went as far as Dawson. Came out of Whitehorse originally in the spring, and then it went back to Whitehorse in the fall. But the tourist run was from between Dawson and Nenana, and it would haul freight.
Mm-hmm. So the tourist probably came up by railroad to Nenana, and then got on the boat there.
Yeah, they came up by railroad. Then they went as far as Dawson, and then when the last boat went to Whitehorse, went all the way through to Whitehorse in the fall. If there was any passengers, they'd take them that way, and then they could go out on the narrow gauge railroad, I believe, to Skagway.
Oh, the White Pass
Railroad. Yeah, that's the way my sister went out in 1924, I believe it was. She went out when she moved out to Redwood City in California, my older sister, and she went out that way with the steamer Yukon through Whitehorse and that narrow gauge railroad to
Skagway.
To Skagway and so on. In those days, I believe the only boats was the Alaska Steamship Company.
Yeah, in those days, that was about the only way to get up here before airplanes.
Yeah, unless unless you got on some private charter or something like that, which I don't believe there was many of them, but the Alaska Steamship Company had the monopoly on the freight and passenger runs from Seattle to Seward.
Mm-hmm. How long did you live in Rampart?
My two brothers and I, we moved to Nenana in 1925. We took a small boat from Rampart to Tanana, and then from Tanana we took the, the steamer, General J.W. Jacobs, from, it was the Alaska Railroad steamboat from Tanana to Nenana. That was our first steamboat ride, and we lived in Nenana about a year with a Bayless family, with Otto Bayless and his wife Belva Bayless. We lived there a year, and then.
And your father stayed in Rampart?
Yeah, he stayed in Rampart. I went to school. Let's see, my two brothers, my twin brother and I, we went to the first grade. Yeah, we went to first grade at the public school in Nenana. Mm-hmm. We were in the first grade.
At that time, was it just an elementary school, or did it have all the grades?
It was elementary, yeah. Yeah. As far as I know.
And were there many Native students in the school?
I can't remember. I don't think there was a high school there, because we were in the first grade.
So
yeah, there were a few Natives, but I wouldn't say the overwhelming majority were, but there were some.
Most of the people, the white population, would be railroad people, employed by the railroad company and...
Either the railroad or the...
Barge line.
Railroad, and then the business people, their families, and of course there was a powerhouse there, and the NC store hired people, the NC company hired people in the winter time. There were some families there that hauled the mail from Rampart, from Nenana to Tanana in the winter time. They had an ongoing.
This would be by dog sled?
No, this is with horses.
Oh, horses.
Yeah. They had a carrier service, mail carrier service, and they also took passengers if you wanted to tough it out.
What would they do, go along the river?
They'd go down the Tanana River, and then they'd shortcut across the Minto Flats, and they'd go to Manly, Tolovana, Manly, Tofty, Fish Lake, and I believe there was another stop between there and then down to Tanana. And there was one team going and one coming all the time. And they'd haul the mail, they'd haul freight, they'd haul passengers. And if they had passengers, they had bricks on the floor, and they'd bring them in at night and put them on the stove for foot warmers and warm them up, and bring them back out in the morning.
So, yeah, it'd be a pretty cold ride.
Yeah.
In the middle of the winter.
Yeah, it depended on what the climate was like at the time. With Otto Bayless and his wife, he was one of the drivers. The horse team driver. And in the summertime, he usually fired fired the boiler at the powerhouse in Enana, steam powerhouse. It was coal fired. Because at that time the railroad
was hauling coal from...
No, the railroad was burning coal too, for everything they ran was running on coal.
Yeah, it really created a need for developing coal.
Get the coal out of Healy, you know, that was the closest source. But the steamboats, they were cordwood fired.
Even at that date, they were still using a lot of cordwood.
All those steamboats were cordwood fired. Anyway, we were in Enana about about July. Let's see, from the latter part of the summer of 1925 to about July of 1926, and then we moved to Holy Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess we got into too much mischief. I decided we'd be better off in the mission.
So were there other children in the Bayless household when you were there?
Yeah, there was there were two older boys and the sister was, I believe her sister by the name of, there was Grover, Howard, Electa. They were the three children that she had, but she had another baby after about 1927. I think she had one more, Mary Bayless. And Mary Bayless right now goes under the name of Mary Roberts, and she lives in Tok.
Hmm.
She runs a greenhouse and flower shop and all that. She's got quite a operation going. I hadn't seen her in years, but I met her on the airplane going out last January, flying to Seattle, so I hadn't seen her in years, but she's the only one left.
Of the children?
Yeah, yeah.
Must have been a good-sized house to have that many kids in it.
Well, they had an upstairs in it. Let's see. Out of my family now, my two brothers have passed away. My sister lives in Boise at the present time. She'll be 80 this summer, in June, but she's living in Boise.
Mm-hmm.
And I visited her.
Just recently?
Yeah, in January, this year in January. Mm-hmm. And she's still pretty healthy. She's getting along pretty good for her age, I mm-hmm. thought.
Good. Yeah, I was backing up a little bit about moving to Holy Cross. Now, that was run by the Sisters of St. Anne? Or the Jesuits?
That was run by the Jesuits. Yeah. But the Sisters of St. Anne, you know, they served as teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And they supervised the girls. There was about 160 children there.
And these would be elementary school age?
Yeah.
Or older? Or some older?
Well, some of the kids were as young as two years old. And they usually left when they got through the grade school. Some of them would stay couple years later, maybe a couple of years, and work at the mission there, like primarily cutting wood, sawing lumber, and all stuff like that. Mm. But
so they had big dormitories.
Yeah, big dormitories. All our beds were made out of wood, shiplap lumber for springs, a reindeer hide for a mattress. There was no luxuries, I'll tell you.
That's why you have a nice straight back.
Yeah, and I still like my wooden chairs and the straight back.
I offered you an easy chair, and you said you preferred the wooden chair.
I like a straight back chair to this day, although most of our benches didn't have a back on them. especially in church, we had to sit straight up. Oh, we, at Holy Cross, yeah, we went to church every morning.
Yeah. Oh, this would start the school day. You go to church
start
first?
Start school day, yeah. The old church bell rang about 6 o'clock, and we got to church at 6:30, and after that was breakfast, and I think about 8:45 we went to school. In the afternoon, from about 1 to 3:30, all us kids were out in the yard sawing and splitting wood and carrying it into the various different places where they needed it. Then we went back to school about, it was about 4:45 or about 4:45. It's a couple of extra hours in the afternoon, late in the day, but in the afternoon, well, we had the daylight, you know.
Oh, that's why you were out doing your chores.
Yeah, we were doing our chores. There was always plenty of chores to do.
Was that sort of on a rotational level? You'd do wood one week?
No. Every day in the winter.
But and with that many children, though, didn't they rotate the jobs around?
Not all the kids were in the wood, but the girls now, they usually spent their time sewing. Mm-hmm. Sewing and patching and making stuff and everything.
Probably helping with cooking, too.
Yeah, cooking and all that, all the domestic chores that were required. And, of course, they'd pack wood, too, for their stoves. I understand there was about 53 stoves in that mission, wood stoves, and they burned 400 cords a year.
Oh, that would have stripped the countryside pretty quickly. So I imagine boats had to bring it in.
The wood?
Yes.
The wood was cut local.
But wouldn't, after a while, it would mean that you'd have to go further and further for
it. Yeah, but they had horses.
So they would just haul it in that way.
They used horses to haul it in. All the years I was there, they didn't have to go over 4 miles. They got a lot of wood right behind the first hill, the little valley there. They got a lot of wood out of there. The first hill behind the mission, they got lots of wood out of there, and then they start working further and further out. But there seemed to be plenty of wood there.
It'd be mostly spruce?
Spruce and birch, mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were kept busy, and in the summer, in the springtime, after the snow melted, of course, we had to take care of the gardens.
I was going to say, I bet that was your summer chore.
We had to work in the gardens. They raised 60 tons of potatoes there approximately that much every summer, so we had plenty of work there. And then the other vegetables, root vegetables, and we had to get out and weed the gardens and hoe the potatoes up. And they had a few cows there, so we'd get down to the meadow and cut hay and pile it up in stacks and haul it up to the mission, up to the barns. I forget how many cows they had, but I'd say they had at least a dozen. Mm-hmm. And
what about chickens? They have
no. No, they used to have pigs once in a while, and they had up to 4 horses.
So you didn't know what a fresh egg was in those days?
No, we hardly ever saw an egg. We didn't have any luxuries, I tell you.
Lots of oatmeal and...
Oatmeal and cornmeal. Breakfast was usually oatmeal one day and cornmeal the next. We saw very little. We hardly ever...
Well, that's considered a healthy diet now,
yeah.
Low fat.
We seldom ever saw any sugar. We used to have margarine when I first went down there, but margarine was outlawed for a number of years. I don't know whether you remember it or not. It used to come white, uncolored, and
oh,
then it
yes,
was outlawed.
Like
we used to have margarine once in a while, but when they outlawed that, we didn't have anything. We ate our bread.
What do you mean outlawed?
Plain.
They didn't allow.
It was outlawed by the government. It was too competitive to the dairy industry.
I knew that was true in Wisconsin, but I didn't realize
yeah.
it was
no,
a nationwide
no.
thing.
We couldn't get it down there after they outlawed it there. So we usually ate our bread just like it came off the loaf,
mm-hmm.
just plain. And we drank our tea pretty plain. There might have been maybe a cup of sugar in a 3-4 gallon bucket, barely tasted.
Oh, maybe for a
so
special.
So our meals were pretty plain. Our diet was primarily reindeer meat and salmon, white mm-hmm. fish and lean cod in the winter. But there was lots of fish available.
So you really utilized local resources.
Oh yeah, they shipped in, of course, a lot of flour, and the summertime the boats would bring the flour for the bread and
some of the things that you could raise.
And the cornmeal and the oatmeal and the split peas and all that, you know.
All the grains, yeah.
Yeah, grains, they'd bring that in, yeah. And they even brought in bales of hay, certain amount of bales of hay for the horses and oats. And any supplies, of course, the boats brought in, everything you needed came in by boats. In the wintertime, mail came in by dog team. It had to come out of Fairbanks and Anchorage to McGrath, then over to Iditarod and Flat, and then the mail carrier, his run was from Flat to Holy Cross, a distance of about 65 miles each way, yeah.
Did you know some of the mailmen?
Old Frank Walker was one of them, yeah. He's the only mailman I can remember, Frank Walker. He ran the mail for years until a year or two after the first airplane arrived, then it was bidded out, you know, to the bidders, the aircraft.
Mm-hmm. People like the
brought
wings.
In by mail, by plane. Excuse me, I gotta go to.
Who are some of the sisters and fathers that you remember in particular while you were there at Holy Cross?
Father DeLon, of course, he was the superior of the Jesuit order here in Alaska at the time. He was a very dynamic speaker. And I'll tell you, when he spoke from the pulpit, nobody ever fell asleep. And I remember Father Cunningham, Father Edward Cunningham was one of the priests there. And Father Rabot, he'd been there since the founding of the mission, I believe, which is around 1912. He was an elderly old man, a paralytic, you know. He was pretty well handicapped, but he'd get around. He could walk around and all that on his own power, but he couldn't really do much of anything else, you know. Father Rabot.
So he stayed right there at the mission.
He stayed there, yeah. Once in a while he'd say mass occasionally, but he'd usually say it privately in the chapel, because they had a couple of chapels there beside the church, one in the sister's building and one in the father's residence, the priest's residence. And so he wasn't very active. Some of the other priests that came and went was Father Paul O'Connor, Another one that was there, he's pretty permanently established. There was Father Lucchese, another one by the name of Father Keyes.
So were they teachers also? Some of them taught?
Yeah, they taught religion, yeah.
And so they were in permanent residence
there? But the sisters were the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But they were permanent residents there, and some of them were temporary too, you know. Mm-hmm.
So Father DeLong didn't stay there, he was in and out?
Well, he had to take off every now and then.
To visit other communities?
Yeah, he'd come, once in a while he'd come up to Fairbanks, or he'd even go outside to Seattle, or, I think the headquarters of the Jesuits was in Portland, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite a go-getter. He'd round up donations for the mission and all that, because it was primarily operated on private contributions. Some of the kids there were, the government would pay maybe a maximum maybe $15 a month for them or something like that. You know, that they were, had no families, absolutely no families or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So were most of them native children?
Yeah, they're all natives, yeah.
That were orphaned or whatever circumstances?
Yeah, there was another family there at the time we were, they were about eighth native, but you couldn't tell it, they looked white too, you know. You still got it going.
Yep.
See, I was going to mention, but in I believe it was around 1927, that 27 or 28, Father DeLong acquired a brand new Caterpillar 15 gas cat for wood hauling and, you know, heavy hauling and stuff like that, in place of the horses. So that after they got the little gasoline tractor, the horses weren't used for hauling wood anymore, because that little cat
did the job. All the work.
Well, a lot more efficiently than keeping horses going and trying to keep them warm. Mm-hmm. And all the hassle of hitching them up, but you know how the tractor is, you run up to the sled and you pull the drawbar pin and you're ready to go. The horses were, and then the horses, you know, there's limited what they could haul. But that little Caterpillar 15, my God, for its size, you can't believe the work it could do. And so rustled up a steam laundry outfit. I understand he got it out of Fairbanks here. So from then on, the mission had a steam laundry. Before that, they had wooden washing machines that you worked with a lever. Did you ever see one of them?
In museums.
They looked like barrel staves.
Oh, yes.
And you operated the plunger inside, I forget what it was like, I think it turned.
Uh-huh.
But the girls were washing with a, and these wooden washing machines operating by a wooden lever. And they had quite a few of them there.